for some of us, when we think of summer nights, we think of the warm breeze, cicadas buzzing, and fireflies dancing in the air. Imagine if you didn't have those memories. Unfortunately, for the current generation of children, it's the reality. I sat down with David Hofer, an environmental scientist within the Siouxland community. Hofer and I talked about the decline not only of fireflies, but also the general insect population and how it impacts our ecosystems.
My name is Dave Hoferer, and I'm the chair of the Natural Sciences Department at Briarcliff University. I'm also an environmental scientist.
There has been a decline in insects, but I've been noticing the dwindling population of fireflies. Can you explain a little bit about that?
There's a lot of research now into the decline of insects in general. The decline is very bad here in North America, north of the Mexican border, and then also in Europe. However, fireflies are of particular interest, probably because, you know, they're our childhood memories. A lot of us grew up and the fireflies are out at various times in summer. And of course, different species will be out at different times from spring through the fall. And, you know, we remember just, you know, the twilight hours when you don't want to go inside because your mom and dad are going to make you go to bed and the fireflies are all out. And it's just kind of a magical time. And we look back with great fondness and nostalgia on that time. The problem is now there are about 177 species roughly in Canada and the United States. So they live even far up into Canada and into Alaska. And at least, 18% of firefly species worldwide have been identified by scientists as being in decline to the point where they might need to be listed as either threatened or endangered species. At least 4 species of fireflies have now been proposed to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I'm not aware that they've been listed yet, but they've been proposed to be listed as either threatened or endangered. The fireflies are definitely in decline. I think the problem with it is that insects are kind of a discarded group, if you will. If you think about people in general, what interests you? If you're interested in the decline of animals around the world, if the bald eagle is declining, I'm interested in that. And of course we were, and it was listed on the Endangered Species Act and is one of the few that have come off the Endangered Species Act because they've recovered. Polar bears, pandas, cougars, lions, elephants. These are the species that capture our attention. Little bugs generally don't capture our attention. Fireflies are probably one of the exceptions. Well, the problem is then scientists, we're human too. So when we go and we study things, what do we want to study? Well, like me, I want to study the birds. That's what I was always interested in. So I go out and study the birds. But insects then have been ignored. What this means is that a very large percentage, perhaps even over 30% of the firefly species in the world, are listed as what's known as data deficient. So we honestly don't know how they're doing. So of the species that are in decline, there could be a lot more species that are in decline. So why are the fireflies here in North America in decline? It looks like a variety of reasons. One is habitat destruction. We are, of course, we have been, you know, rapidly converting all kinds of different ecosystems to our cities and our roads and our farms and, you know, everything else that we want to use the land for. Fireflies usually, not always, but usually like wetter places. They like wetlands. They like places that at least have some period of wetness to them. Most of the firefly's life cycle we never see because they spend about 2 years of their life cycle as larvae. Well, as larvae, they actually roam around. They're actually voracious predators. So they eat things like small snails and slugs and, you know, that's what they're doing. They're in the leaf litter. They're in the soils. They're eating other animals. And then when they emerge, that's when we see them. because they emit a species-specific pattern of lights. Some of them, like, it might only be once every 6 seconds. Some of them might be like, you know, four flashes in a row. Others, like the most common one here in eastern North America, is called the Big Dipper. And the reason it's called the Big Dipper is because when it flashes, it basically kind of holds the flash and then it kind of dips as it flies. And so it looks like this little fly is taking a big dip in the air, and it leaves this streak of light in the night sky, and it's really kind of amazing. We have been disrupting the habitat that they need, and not necessarily the habitat that the adults need, but the habitat that the eggs and the larvae need, the parts of the life cycle that we generally don't see.
With Iowa having drier seasons more often than normal, is that a factor in why we see fireflies less?
Increasingly, it's looking like climate change is now playing a big part in the decline of fireflies, because if they like wet areas, and some, especially here in Iowa, it's becoming drier and drier, it's not good for them. There are ways that we can potentially combat this in our backyards, but overall, the trend with climate change is not good. A huge factor in their decline seems to be pesticides. This may not be as much agricultural runoff as we have thought, although there's a lot of research that's still going into that. But if you think about it, as homeowners, we're taught to have, you know, these beautiful lush lawns that are only supposed to have one type of grass and nothing else. And what can eat your grass? Well, there are all those grubs underneath the ground that are eating your grass. So you have to put on pesticides to kill the grubs. Well, the problem with that is, what are grubs? They're beetle larvae. Well, fireflies are actually not flies, they're beetles. If you put on the pesticides that are designed to kill beetle larvae onto your lawn, well, how can we then be surprised if the fireflies also die? Because it's designed to kill them too.
What is data deficiency?
The International Union for the Conservation of Nature keeps what's called the Red List of Species. I think their goal is to have enough data on every single species that we know about in the world that we can track whether or not those species are actually healthy or whether they're in decline. Data deficient means we just don't have enough data to make any determination of whether or not this species is doing well. We know it exists. We don't know how well it's doing. Is it imperiled? Good question.
Why is there some data deficiency when it comes to insects?
That's kind of what I was getting at, you know, at the beginning, that most biologists, I mean, we are inspired by the same types of things that, you know, regular people are inspired by. We want to study the giant trees. We want to study the birds that capture our imaginations. We want to study the large mammals. We want to study poisonous snakes, you know, things that capture people's imaginations. Generally, insects don't capture people's imaginations. Insects just seem to be annoying, and why should we be interested in them? The problem with that, of course, is that insects in terrestrial ecosystems are an absolutely essential link between the microscopic world and the macroscopic world. So we all know that there are microscopic animals, as well as algae and other types of organisms that live in soils and waters. Then there's the macroscopic world, the lizards and the snakes and the birds and the mammals that we all know and like. Well, the problem is, what are all the lizards and the snakes and the amphibians, can't leave them out? What are they largely feeding on? They're feeding on insects. Insects are feeding on either other insects or they're feeding on those microscopic animals. If they're carnivores, obviously there are a lot of them that are herbivores. But they then transfer the energy and the nutrients from the microscopic world to the larger animals that we care about. If the insects are in decline, then all of the animals that we care about are pretty much going to be in decline as well. But because the insects have not captured our imaginations, not as much scientific work has gone into actually studying the insects. Then, of course, we have a tremendous problem with, there are so many insects, so many species of insects. So, well, like with mammals, there are like barely 5,000 species that we know about. Well, insects, we already know about a million species, and we probably haven't even described half of the insect species on the planet yet. There's just so many species to describe. And then it turns out that most insects are probably far less abundant than we originally thought. In my beginning environmental science course, I used to always show part of a Time magazine article that, if I remember, it was from 1975. It was from the 1970s. And it was about the war with the insects and how we have to eke out a living. You know, farmers have to put the pesticides on their fields because the insects are there. They would eat up everything otherwise. And don't worry about the insects. They're so abundant, we could not possibly ever extinct even one insect species. Well, you know, now we know what the writer of that particular article did not know. The large majority of insect species are habitat specialists, and many of the firefly species are habitat specialists as well. And of course, what that means is that at least for part of their life cycle, they are restricted. They either need a certain type of food, or they need a certain type of environment, like a wetland, which of course we've been draining, in order to survive. And if they don't have that, yeah, we do cause their extinction. So that's one of the problems that we have. Insects are so diverse, and I don't know why it's taken us decades really to figure out that most insects are not nearly as abundant as we thought they were. Fireflies will have all kinds of different patterns of their flashes, and each different pattern is a different species. And usually what it is the females flashing to attract the males as a mate, but sometimes it also goes the other way, where the males are flashing to attract the females, and sometimes they're both attracting each other. It's almost like Morse code, whereas, or the Marco Polo, you know, one flashes Marco and the other flashes Polo. It's like, oh, so you're a member of the same species, you're the opposite sex. Okay, yes, we could produce more fireflies. They're remarkably diverse, but it makes them very difficult to study. There's a lot of studies recently. There is even a scientist who in her lab has used machine learning on computers to try to see whether or not we could take video of fireflies at night and determine the species that are depicted in any area of the country or even of the world based upon their flash patterns. And it turns out they've gotten very accurate in terms of what species are actually there. It's now possible to participate in firefly research, actually, as just a regular citizen. There's lots of signals. There's even a femme fatale firefly, as it's called. And the femme fatale is a female of a species. What they do is they try to mimic the flash patterns of other fireflies to lure them in. And then, of course, she captures them and eats them. One of the things is the fireflies, I mean, you know, why do they even glow? Why do they glow at all? It turns out that the chemicals they use to glow, like it's been named luciferin, and the enzyme that allows it to happen is luciferase. You know, it's like, okay, you know, what a name. But they have medical applications, and there are different medical applications that have been made over the decades for us, based upon fireflies. Fireflies used to be collected by the millions in various parts of this country. There were programs where 4-H groups or Boy Scout groups or, you know, or other groups like that go out and capture fireflies and then give them to us, and we'll pay you like a penny per bug or something like that. And so a lot of kids participated in doing that. Fortunately, over the past four decades, we now have, you know, artificial substitutes for the chemicals that fireflies produce. But it turns out that fireflies are toxic. From what I've read, we're not entirely sure how firefly species acquire their toxins. One scientist actually observed fireflies eating part of a milkweed flower. Well, of course, the milkweed flower contains that toxic substance, just like every other part of the milkweed does, and that's how monarch butterflies become toxic. So do they actually acquire their toxins from food sources? And that's possible. And so now going back to this femme fatale firefly, well, maybe what she needs to do is she needs to eat other fireflies to sequester the toxins inside her body so that birds and other predators will not eat her.
There is a project called Firefly Atlas, which is a collaborative attempt to better understand and conserve the diversity of fireflies in North America. The Firefly Atlas was introduced in 2022, which aims to improve our shared understanding of firefly species, distributions, and habitats, and identify threats to their populations. Here, Hofer explains how it can help with the data deficiency.
You go to Firefly Atlas, which is online, fireflyatlas.org. You can even do just this brief little training on how to identify different firefly species and how to identify different patterns. And then you can upload those data so that scientists can actually use them. And we can get a better handle on how widely distributed certain species are, how abundant they are in different regions of the country or of North America, and whether or not they're in decline.
Can you explain how the decline in insect populations impact our ecosystems?
One of the easiest things, I think, to grasp is you think about why do, you know, literally billions of birds fly back to North America to breed every single spring? And we're recording this in mid-May. This is peak bird migration here for our part of Iowa. It's because there's abundant insects. So there's abundant food for them and then to feed to their offspring. Insects are a wonderful source of protein for amphibians, for lizards, for small mammals, for birds, for all kinds of different life forms. Insects, again, are that essential link. The ecosystem is based upon the plants. There's no doubt about that. Insects are one of the main herbivores in any given terrestrial ecosystem. We probably don't appreciate that enough. Maybe not until, you know, like you get a grasshopper swarm. They're called locust swarms over in northern Africa, where they will literally eat all the crops. But they are one of the main herbivores. And one of the main reasons that plants produce all these chemicals to try to be toxic to herbivores. So insects are necessary links between plants and the microscopic world and then the animals that we know. Once the insects decline, then many of the smaller amphibians and mammals and reptiles and even birds are also going to be in decline. And if they're in decline, well, what do you think the larger mammals and birds eat? So that's the problem. If you're breaking a link, you know, you're breaking thousands of links in the food web that are absolutely essential for the proper functioning of ecosystems. If the insects are not there, the ecosystem just largely doesn't function. A lot of the energy flow is not going to happen. And then that nutrient cycling that normally goes from the producers, which are the plants, the photosynthesizers, all the way to the top predators, those links are also broken. Ecosystems, at that point, we pretty much have to step in and start to manage the ecosystems because they are degraded on their own.
When did people start noticing the decline of insect populations? And what factors increase the decline to exceed the natural pace?
Probably in the 1990s is when it really began to be noticed. And certainly in the last two decades, it's been noticed. The problem is it's been traced back to, of course, the beginning of industrial agriculture. It's amazing. You put all these pesticides on millions of acres of land in North America and in Europe and other places around the world. They're designed to kill insects. And what happens? The insects decline. Who would have thought? You know, there are a lot of people who are trying to say, no, it's not the agricultural pesticides, but that seems to be one of the big keys. There's also habitat destruction. Now things like climate change are making things worse, like we talked about with the fireflies. But it's probably in the last two or three decades that we've really noticed it and where the major research has started.
Do you think now that it's recognizable that people are now concerned or wanting to make changes to save them?
I think that's the odd thing. I would say not enough. There are some people that have noticed the changes. When I've talked to people, it's largely the older people who recognize that there have been changes. And we'd have stories like, oh yeah, in summer, you know, like I used to be able to drive my car from this town to another town many miles away where I had relatives, and my windshield would just be covered with bug splatter. And then they would say, last decade I can do it, and I hardly have a single bug on my windshield. So they've noticed the decline because they understand what used to happen. But I've asked this about some of my classes, you know, so generally 18 to 22-year-old students, and they have not noticed the decline. And it makes sense why. Because, you know, every generation kind of assumes that when you're growing up, whatever the environment that you grew up in, that's kind of the pristine natural state. And then as we live, we notice changes from what we used to experience in our childhood. So I can see the decline of fireflies now because I remember they were very abundant when I was a kid. Well, there are going to be a lot of, you know, young adults today who, when they were kids, fireflies were not that abundant. And so they don't notice the decline. I think that's what's happening. What we need is better general information out there for people to say, no. So if you grew up in the 90s or you grew up in the 2000s, you experienced already a diminished ecosystem. You already experienced a decline of insects. Let's go back 100 years ago and describe how many insects were around then. That's what we need to do so that people have a better idea. So I think there's probably a general lack of awareness, and that we need to be a lot more aware of what's happening to insects.
Can you talk about how some insects are connected to water quality?
Well, a lot of insects have larval stages that are actually in the water. So people always know about mosquitoes this way. And of course, mosquitoes are associated with, you know, standing pools of water. But there are a lot of other insects that their larval or nymph stages will take place in the water. Fly fishermen know this very well. They're called fly fishermen because when they tie their flies, they're very attentive to which fly is actually emerging. And they're kind of the dominant fly that are around now, with the idea those are the types of flies that are going to attract, you know, the trout and the other fish that they're fishing for. Well, that can change week to week. Fly fishermen can be just amazing naturalists because they understand that the larvae are emerging from the waters. When the larvae are no longer in the streams that they used to be in, that is a good indication that those streams are actually in decline. They've been polluted in some way. It doesn't necessarily have to be chemicals. It could be just increased soil runoff. There could be other things that are polluting it, but that now the insects are in decline. So if you have an abundance of aquatic insects at whatever stage, there are some where adults will still live in or near the water, then you generally have some really good water that is polluted. You know, there's what's called macroinvertebrates. Insects are part of the macroinvertebrates, and they give us a good indication of whether or not the water quality is high or the water quality is low. Yeah, if you can find the abundance of insects in and around the waters, you have some pretty good waters. But if you can't, then it's likely that you need to find out whatever the sources of pollution for those waters are and start to clean them up so the insects will come back.
According to the Natural History Museum, a mass extinction event is when species vanish quicker than they're being replaced. It's classified as such when about 75% of the world's species are being lost in a short period of time.
Do people even know about the sixth mass extinction?
I think it's becoming more widely known, but probably largely they don't. It's a topic that's still debated scientifically, but there's on a range of different taxa, which are different types of species or different groups of species. What we find is, of course, extinction is a natural event. So there's always going to be what we call a natural background extinction rate. But during the five great extinction events in the history of the world, the most famous of which is when the dinosaurs died out approximately 66 million years ago, the extinction rates, of course, greatly increased. Well, we can kind of measure from fossil data how much they increased. Depending upon the taxa today, the rates of extinction are between 100 and 1,000 times greater than the background extinction rate. And in some taxa, it's been measured as being almost 10,000 times faster than the background extinction rate. So what that indicates is that there's something else going on that is definitely causing species decline and species extinction. And of course, the main thing that's going on is us. We are modifying the habitat in so many ways that other organisms just can't live anymore. Because of that, many scientists have written that we are in the midst of the sixth great extinction event in the history of our world, because extinction rates now are at least equal to the extinction rates of the five previous great extinctions.
Can you explain the connection of the sixth mass extinction with insect populations?
So the extinction rates of the insects are also increasing. This is one of the things that we would expect if there's a mass extinction going on. The other thing is that mass extinctions, like our destruction of the habitat, our alteration of the habitat, chemical pollution, these types of things, as we know, negatively affect other species and are going to cause them to go into decline. But what we often don't think about then is, as one species goes into decline, many other species are going to go into decline. So if you have a couple insect species that are in decline, think about birds that come back and nest here in Iowa for spring and summer. Well, suddenly they don't have enough food. And if they don't have enough food, they don't raise as many offspring. So when they come back next year, there are fewer of them. And then that keeps continuing until it becomes a trend. And then as they decline, well, there might be other species that also eat them. They might eat some of their eggs or nestlings in the nest, because it's very common for bird species where only half of the nests will actually produce nestlings, because there are a lot of predators out there. And then their predators don't have enough food because insects declining. Then suddenly you have birds that depend upon the insects that start to decline. Then you have other species that depend upon the birds being healthy. They start to decline. It's a cascading series of events. And that's what is going to produce a mass extinction. It's not going to be one cause, and it's going to happen all at once. It's going to be all kinds of different causes, and it's going to be a chain link event. And that is what we're seeing right now. The end of this for the mass extinction. The good news for everyone is that still over 99% of the species that we have described that exist today are still alive. Even if they're in decline, they're still alive, which means that there's time to save them. All we have to do is just become aware of the problem and care so that we do something about it. And that, I think that's the key. We need to care. If we care about it, we can actually do it. And so what is one of the things that we can do? Plant native species in and around your yard. So if you're going to have a flower garden, have native flowers. They don't have to be tulips. They don't, they don't have to be flowers that are not native to Iowa. Plant native flowers. There are beautiful flowers that will bloom from April through October right here in Iowa.
During this conversation, Hofer explained some factors impacting insect populations, including habitat loss, climate change, and pesticide use. He also mentioned ways people can help restore insect communities by planting native plants and reducing chemical use. I'm Alejandra Perez for Siouxland Public Media News.